Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Anthony Brooks, and this is On Point. First, he said family separation wasn't his policy, but it was. Then he blamed Democrats and said his hands were tied, but they weren't. Then, faced with a growing outrage and a political crisis spinning out of control, President Trump signed an executive order to end his policy of separating children from their parents at the border.
We're going to have strong, very strong borders, but we're going to keep the families together. I didn't like the sight or the feeling of families being separated.
Some of Trump's key advisors pushed for the controversial policy, chief among them the firebrand speechwriter and top aide Stephen Miller. This hour on Point, Trump's immigration enforcer and his art of constructive controversy. You can join us on air or online. What do you make of the shocking and painful chaos on the border this week and the president's latest executive order? Will it solve the crisis that he created, or is it too little too late? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And joining me now from Asbury Park, New Jersey, via Skype is McKay Coppins. He's the staff writer for The Atlantic and the author of The Wilderness, Deep Inside the Republican Party's Combative, Contentious, Chaotic Quest to Take Back the White House. He also spent the last few months working on a profile of Stephen Miller, the top Trump advisor. You can link to the Atlantic piece headlined Trump's Right-Hand Troll. It's at our website at onpointradio.org, along with his follow-up, The Outrage Over Family Separation is Exactly What Stephen Miller Wants. McKay Coppins, it's good to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Anthony.
So we're going to talk about Stephen Miller, but I just want to start with you and just kind of do a quick update about where we are. First of all, with regard to signing this executive order, what caused the president to back down and sign this executive order ending his policy of family separation at the border?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Obviously, this was kind of a political crisis spiraling out of control for the administration. And within the administration, based on my own reporting and reporting that I've seen elsewhere, it's clear that there were different camps, as there often are with situations like this. There were some within the White House, like Stephen Miller and some others, who were expected this kind of outcry, expected this kind of backlash, and were braced for it and even welcomed it. Then there were others who just couldn't abide this kind of the images that were coming out of the border. And then there were just basic political issues. You know, the president met with the Republican lawmakers from Capitol Hill amid this kind of growing backlash. And it was clear from those who were at that meeting that the president knew he had a political problem on his hands and he was going to have to do something to fix it. But I also think that there are bigger dynamics here at play, which is that, you know, the president wants to, he was trying to send a message with this. And it was clearly, you know, in terms of domestic policy, he was playing to his base. In terms of the actual issue, the substance of the issue, you know, the administration says they were trying to create a deterrent for you know, would-be illegal immigrants. And so, while they have kind of put a Band-Aid on the issue, there are still a lot of outstanding questions. And I'm not sure that the fundamental dynamics here have changed. I think the president is still going to be pursuing an extremely hardline immigration policy.
Right. Zero tolerance essentially is still in place, according to the White House. But in terms of this Band-Aid of the executive order, let's talk a little bit about that. What does the executive order actually do? And in your view, what doesn't it do that remains to be dealt with and struggled with?
So the basic bare bones language of the kind of hastily prepared executive order, it directs the Department of Homeland Security to keep detained families together. Okay. Yeah. So what it doesn't do is it doesn't address that, first of all, children who have already been separated from their parents.
Right, some 2,300 of them, exactly. As we understand it. Right, yeah.
So there's no information or guidance in that executive order about how when or if or how those people are going to be reunited, those families are going to be reunited. So that's a huge issue. The other thing that it doesn't address is that right now the administration can only detain families together for up to 20 days. There's a 1997 settlement agreement that restricts the detaining of children past 20 days. So as it stands now, after 20 days, authorities would have to separate children from their families unless a judge or Congress takes action to change that. And so that's the other big outstanding question.
Interesting. Now, that consent decree that you mentioned, the 1997 consent decree known as the Flores case, so this stipulates that children can't be detained for more than 20 days. So, McKay, is this going to lead to essentially another showdown in the courtroom if the Trump administration tries to detain these families with their children for more than 20 days, right?
That's what it seems like. The order that Trump signed directs the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, to file a request with the federal judge in California who oversees the 1997 settlement, asking for changes that would allow DHS to detain families for as long as their cases are pending.
Right.
So we're going to see how that plays out. But as of now, there's no clear answer as to what's going to happen to those families, you know, even 3 weeks from now.
Listeners, we're talking about President Trump's executive order to end this family separation on the borders. And we're also talking about a week of chaos down there. What do you make of what you're seeing of the president's recent executive order? My guest is McKay Coppins. In a moment, we're going to be talking to McKay, staff writer for The Atlantic, about his profile of Stephen Miller, who's really regarded as one of Trump's key immigration law enforcers, I guess you could say. Let's take a call. Jesse is calling from Spooner, Wisconsin. Jesse, you're on the air. Thank you for calling, and go ahead.
Hi, Anthony. I just wanted to say this portrayal in the media that Donald Trump is responsible for this immigration policy of separation of families is total fabrication. That law was passed. It went through the entire Obama administration, and it also, I believe it was, a lot of that was started during the George W. Bush administration. So,
well, Jesse, I know this is
law that,
yeah, I know, Jesse, and this is certainly a position that's being put out there. But let's be clear: there's law and there's policy within that law. But let me have McKay Coppins take that question and respond. McKay, talk to Jesse, who's sort of making that point that we're hearing again and again, that, and indeed the Trump administration was making this very point, that family separation was the law that they were just following.
Right. This is an important distinction to make, and it is confusing. The policy is very complicated, so it's understandable how there's been a lot of confusion on all sides of this issue. So what the Trump administration essentially says is that there is a standing law that when an undocumented immigrant shows up at the border and is prosecuted, is put into you know, jailed and arrested or put into the legal justice system, they can't have their child with them in prison, right, or in jail. That's just an obvious thing. That is true. That law has existed forever. The difference is that President Trump has decided, the Trump administration has decided, to follow a zero tolerance policy, which effectively means that everyone who shows up at the border, or virtually everyone who shows up at the border, is then arrested and detained and put in, and they're threatening to prosecute them. So that what that effectively means is that everyone who shows up at the border with a child is separated. That was not happening during the Obama administration or the George W. Bush administration. In fact, this very question was considered by both administrations, and in both cases, President Bush and President Obama decided that they didn't want to go do anything that harsh, that they felt that separating children from their parents was too inhumane, and that frankly would also create political problems for them, just like we're seeing now for President Trump. So indeed, that's a difference.
Yeah. McKay, stand by. I want to introduce Kristen Welker, NBC News White House correspondent, who's joining us now from Washington. Kristen, it's good to have you. Thanks for making the effort to get
here. Hi, Anthony. It's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. I'd love to just get your quick response to the president's executive order. How do you see this? What essentially seems like a fairly dramatic change of mind in his view?
It's a dramatic change for a couple of reasons. First of all, remember, this is a president who rarely, if never, backs down, reverses course. And in this case, that's exactly what he did. Why did he do it? We've been trying to drill down the exact moment, but I can tell you this. He was facing a barrage of pressure, both politically and also personally. Let's take the political piece of this first. You had Democrats and Republicans saying this policy cannot stand. You had global allies, Theresa May, saying this is not the way we treat immigrants. It's not humane. You had the Pope weighing in, as well as CEOs. Ultimately, this issue of getting tough on immigration appeals to his base. So I think the thinking going into this zero tolerance policy is this is something that would be cheered by his base. But once those images began to surface, kids being held in cage-like structures, the sounds of kids crying who were separated from their families, that is when you started to hear this chorus of voices saying, this is not who we are as Americans. This can't stand. And by the way, it's the current First Lady as well as former First Ladies saying, we've got to do something about this. Let's take the personal piece of this, Anthony. You had the First Lady and Ivanka Trump privately saying to President Trump, based on my reporting, my conversations with sources here at the White House, this has to change. The reality is you do have the power to do something about it. You've got to do something about it.
And so that's what he did.
He made that determination.
Yeah. Kristen, we're coming up against a break. We literally have 15 seconds left. I want to just you to use those 15 seconds. What are you watching for next? What is the big question that remains unanswered now?
The biggest question is what happens to those roughly 2,300 children who remain separated from their families. DHS Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen was on Capitol Hill today. She still can't provide a firm answer. They've got to figure out what to do with the kids. They clearly didn't think through what the next steps were.
All right. Kristen Welker, NBC News White House correspondent, joining us there from Washington. Kristen, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. McKay Coppin, staff writer for The Atlantic, stay with us. We're going to talk more about Stephen Miller, Trump's top immigration hawk. And listeners, you can join the conversation. What do you make of Stephen Miller and his hardline approach on immigration? We'll be right back after a short break. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
The news can feel like an echo chamber. You listen to podcasts to get that perspective shift. So travel with NPR's Rough Translation. Follow familiar conversations in unfamiliar parts of the world and get a new perspective on home. Rough Translation. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks, and we're talking about the man behind many of President Trump's most controversial immigration policies. You can join the conversation. Do you share Stephen Miller's views on stricter immigration policy? Did he take things too far this week, separating children from their parents at the border, or at least getting behind that policy until the president signed an executive order that promised to keep families together? He signed that yesterday. Here's President Trump speaking at a rally in Duluth, Minnesota, shortly after he signed that order. Here's what he said about immigration.
The Democrats want open borders. Let everybody come in. Let everybody pour in. We don't care. Let them come in from the Middle East. Let them come in from all over the place. We don't care. We're not going to let it happen. By the way, today I signed an executive order. We're going to keep families together, but the border is going to be just as tough as it's been.
My guest today, McKay Coppin, staff writer at The Atlantic. You can link to his piece entitled Trump's Right-Hand Troll at our website, onpointradio.org. That's a piece about his top advisor, Stephen Miller. And before we move on to that conversation, McKay, what do you make of that rally? Because in so many ways, this seems to be the pattern. I mean, the president can use sort of the chaos that he sows as a rallying cry for his base. That seemed to be happening in a big way last night.
Yeah, there's no question. It often seems that in the midst of his greatest kind of political controversies, when there's his administration is at its most kind of besieged and chaotic, he often retreats to his base, and he'll hold a rally in, you know, in a state that he won in 2016, and he'll kind of bathe in the affection of his supporters. I think that also, you know, you heard the way that, just in that clip you played, the way that the crowd was responding. I thought it was notable that they responded. There were cheers for him signing the executive order to keep families together, because I think even among a lot of Republicans, that policy was maybe a bridge too far. But they also, you know, were clearly giving him credit for taking care of this issue, when the fact is he created the problem in the first place.
Right. So, McKay, what we wanted to sort of shift this conversation and spend the rest of the hour talking about a couple of things, and in particular, the role of Stephen Miller, speechwriter, senior policy advisor. You've written about him. You describe him as Trump's chief immigration enforcer. Describe the role of Stephen Miller in the Trump White House.
Yeah, so Stephen Miller comes from Capitol Hill, where he was actually an aide to then-Senator Jeff Sessions. And even in his kind of 20s on Capitol Hill, he carved out a reputation for himself as, you know, a hard right immigration hawk. In 2013, when there was a bipartisan push to pass a comprehensive immigration reform bill, Stephen Miller played a pretty key role, even as kind of an obscure staffer, in drumming up kind of populist conservative opposition to that bill and ultimately sinking it. He joined the Trump campaign, and now in the White House, he is Trump's chief speechwriter, his senior policy advisor. But the issue that he is best known for, the issue that the president often, you know, pays most attention to him on, is immigration. He had, throughout, for example, the congressional negotiations last fall and earlier this year over the Dreamers, over DACA. Stephen Miller was kind of the White House's point man on that issue. He was sitting in negotiations with senators. He was in the room every time the president, you know, had an important conversation about the issue. And he was offering advice. He was crafting messaging. And he played a key role in advancing this family separation policy. If there's basically any time you see this administration making move on immigration, you can bet that Stephen Miller had his fingerprints on.
Yeah. Now, you describe him as someone, and you had a long sit down with him last year when for a profile you did in the Atlantic magazine, which we've linked to, by the way, at onpointradio.org. You interviewed him last year, and you really talked about something that he calls constructive controversy with the purpose of enlightenment. What does that mean? And relate that to this, to many people seemed a fairly shocking policy of separating families at the border.
So to understand this kind of worldview that Miller has, you have to first understand where he comes from. He grew up in a pretty wealthy, kind of affluent bubble of liberalism in Santa Monica, where he was one of the only conservative kids in a very liberal, diverse high school. And it was there in high school, and then later also in college at Duke, where he kind of developed himself into what I call basically a conservative troll, but like almost a professional one. He would go around his high school doing and saying things designed to provoke reaction from his liberal classmates. And it's not that he didn't believe the things he was saying, but he always calibrated every argument he made for agitation rather than persuasion. He believed that there's value in provoking a kind of angry, or outrageous response from his opponents. And he's kind of applied that same idea to his work now in the White House. The first week of the Trump presidency is a good example. The first week of the Trump presidency, Stephen Miller was one of the key architects of the travel ban executive order that President Trump signed, that was banning travel from 7 majority Muslim countries in the U.S.
Right.
The way, if you'll recall, the way that executive order was implemented was it was signed on a Friday afternoon. It contained no guidance on implementation. And it immediately kind of plunged airports across the country into chaos. And there were protesters there, and, you know, media swarmed to cover the spectacle. And to a lot of people watching on TV, including myself back then, it seemed like evidence of a complete kind of disaster for the administration. They had bungled this. But if you then read some of the reporting, including, an interview with Steve Bannon, who worked with Stephen Miller on that executive order, later said that the reason they implemented the executive order the way they did was so that, quote, the snowflakes would show up at the airport and riot. The snowflakes being a term of kind of derision that conservatives use to describe liberals who they feel are too kind of mushy on their issues. Anyway, so that's a good example of, I think, the way that Miller approaches a lot of these things. He told me that he's long found value in generating constructive controversy with the purpose of enlightenment. And I think that you see that at the border separation policy. Like you said, when I talked to Stephen Miller...
Well, McKay, wait, let me just jump in here because I want to ask you, do you think that Stephen Miller is sitting back there in the White House saying, yeah, this played out exactly the way I wanted it to on the border? We wanted to sow chaos. We wanted to have outrage. We wanted to have all this in the purpose of, in the service of constructive controversy with the purpose of enlightenment. I mean, that seems far-fetched, but let... Tell me what you think.
So what I was going to say is, first of all, I interviewed him in March. So this earlier in March. So this was before the border separation policy was implemented. So I didn't talk to him about it. I don't know for sure what he's thinking because we didn't talk about it. But the pattern of everything else that he's done in this White House, my conversations with people inside the White House and out who know him, I have no question that Stephen Miller... For Stephen Miller, this is playing out exactly as he planned. He, I'm sure, thinks that this was a success. The fact that the president is reversing his position is probably a blow to Miller. But I think, as far as Miller was concerned, the protests, all of it was good politics, and it was good for him. He even told me, actually, when I interviewed him, that. That as long as Americans are focused on immigration, then he thinks that the president is winning. It doesn't matter what the polls say. It doesn't matter what kind of bad headlines he's getting. If the issue that Americans are focused on is immigration, then Trump is winning. So I think that that's an important prism to kind of understand.
And McKay, what do you think about that? Because that's something that really intrigued me in your piece, this idea that as long as Americans are focusing on immigration, it's a win for Trump. Because it would seem that this week... it's distracting from a lot of other things that might be much more positive. For example, I mean, if Trump wants to tout the positive effects of his tax cut or a strong economy or a low jobless rate, he can't talk about any of that because he's dealing with outrage from the Pope, from Europe, from the world, from moderate Republicans all across the country, not to mention Democrats.
Yeah, it would be an understatement to say I'm extremely skeptical of that theory of the electorate. For one thing, one of the things Stephen Miller says is that, a lot of the 2016 campaign hinged on immigration issues, and Trump won that election. And that's true, but he also lost the popular vote by, millions of voters. He's eked out an Electoral College win. I'm not sure that necessarily applies to, for example, the midterm election. But also, there's just the fundamental reality that polls show that moves like the border separation policy are extremely unpopular. So it's hard for me to necessarily buy into this theory. I would also say that, you made a good point. That I saw a poll, I think it was Gallup, that came out just as the family separation policy was starting to kind of dominate national news. So this poll would have been taken before this became a major national news story. And it actually showed Trump at I think 45%, which is one of his highest, the highest approval ratings he's gotten. All of which is just to say that if you set immigration aside, if you set this issue aside, the administration, Trump would have a story to tell. Now, whether you agree with him or not, that the economy is improving, and usually presidents and the parties in power benefit from that. I think that it seems strange that he decided to kind of insert this extremely polarizing issue into the national discourse at a moment when he has other things going on that could have helped him. And that, I think that goes back to Stephen Miller's influence. It was Miller who had the most influence within the White House and kind of pushing this policy.
McKay, stand by. We want to get some callers in on this conversation. We're talking about President Trump's executive order to stop family separation on the border. We're also talking about Stephen Miller, one of his top advisors and his toughest immigration hawks. What do you make of this policy? How did you see it play out this week? Let's go to Kate, who's calling from Ames, Iowa. Kate, you're on the air. Thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hi, Anthony. First of all, I'm not a supporter of taking kids from parents or this administration, but immigrants coming don't really have access to American news media. They don't read English. They don't speak English. And on our side of the border, we're tearing ourselves apart over this. But do these immigrants even know their kids could be taken? Are we educating the immigrants? Are we trying to reach out to them so they understand? And further, why aren't we laying any blame at all on the fact that the parents are choosing to cross illegally? They're making the choice. So we can't put 100% of this on the administration. We just can't.
Kate, I think you raise a good point. And you know, McKay, one of the things, I mean, respond to Kate any way you want. But I mean, I think among other things, Kate is raising a really valid point about a broken immigration system. There are a lot of people that are frustrated out there that the kind of passion that has been devoted to kids being taken from their parents, and rightly so, but that kind of passion isn't being invested in looking at ways to fix this broken system that a lot of people are really upset about.
Well, sure. There's no question that the immigration system in this country has been broken for a long time. I think that there are advocates both on both sides of the partisan aisle. There have been Republicans and Democrats who have been working for a long time to fix the immigration system. Like I said, there was even, you know, 5 years ago, a pretty comprehensive immigration reform effort that was signed on by a serious majority of senators, but it failed in the House. You know, I think there actually has been a lot of passion driven toward fixing this system. The problem is that there are certain elements in Washington, and I think a lot of them now reside in the White House, who are not interested in fixing the system in a way that can pass legislative approval with both Democrats and Republicans, right? You know, frankly, you go back to last fall when Republicans and Democrats were just trying to get together on helping the Dreamers. These, you know, undocumented immigrants were brought here as children by their parents and who have, you know, passed all these other criteria that show that they are law-abiding members of American communities, helping them not to get deported, right? This is an issue that has massive approval across the spectrum. It's the classic kind of issue where the vast majority of Americans support it. Most people in Congress support it. But when it came down to actually trying to pass something that would help those people stay in the country, you know, you had the Trump administration put out a list of conditions that were just, they were poison pills for the legislation. They were deal breakers that they knew, and Stephen Miller actually was the one who drafted that list of demands, but they were things that they knew Democrats would never go along with. And so that's where I think we run into the problem of there is a lot of support for fixing a lot of these issues, but at the end of the day, there are just people who are bent on stopping it.
Let's squeeze in another call before we have to go to a break. Sonny is calling from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Sonny, you're on the air. Go ahead. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Anthony. One of my biggest concerns, other than the fact that Stephen Miller clearly knew what this policy was going to cause, is that other people that signed off on the policy might not have understood A plus B equals C. You know, from what I understand, they took it from a civil problem when you cross the border to a federal problem, which means the parents have to be arrested and you're not allowed to detain children. And so that led to them being separated. So my biggest concern is that that lack of foresight in that policy is going to translate to other policies that they established throughout the administration. And Trump and his team are just simply not going to realize how it's going to unfold like anything else they do. And that's terrifying, in my opinion.
Sonny, thanks so much. McKay, Kopp, and Sonny there talking about unintended consequences of this kind of situation.
Yes, I think that there probably were people who were involved in this policy that didn't quite wrap their heads around what would happen. But I'm not willing to kind of give them that much leeway. I think that most of the architects of this policy understood what was going to happen, and I think that they understood the backlash that they would get, and they welcomed it. The question is, what does the president understand? And we've seen this with a lot of issues, from health care to taxes to now immigration. Does the president actually understand the policies that he's implementing? And that's an open question for debate even within his White House.
Interesting. McKay Coppins, will pick up on that after the break. We're talking about the man behind many of President Trump's controversial immigration policies, Stephen Miller. We're also talking about the news this week about chaos on the border and President Trump's executive order signed yesterday to end the policy of family separation. We'll be right back after a short break. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, host of How I Built This. And on our latest episode, how Chip Wilson turned workout clothes into a fashion statement. And along the way, built a breakout brand, Lululemon, now worth billions. You can listen to How I Built This on Apple Podcasts or however you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're talking about the man behind many of President Trump's most controversial immigration policies, Stephen Miller. Last year, after President Trump announced his support for legislation that would create a points-based immigration system, CNN's Jim Acosta pressed Miller on what immigration means to America. And Acosta read him the poem on the Statue of Liberty's plaque, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free." Here's Miller's response.
The Statue of Liberty is a symbol of liberty enlightening the world. It's a symbol of American liberty lighting the world. The poem that you're referring to that was added later is not actually part of the original Statue of Liberty. But more fundamentally,
National Park revisionism.
And here's Stephen Miller last January appearing on CNN to quash rumors that White House staff were questioning President Trump's mental stability. The interview, however, quickly descended into a heated clash that went viral overnight.
Don't be condescending. The president's experiences, what I've seen with him traveling to meet dozens of foreign leaders, with his incredible work.
Okay, you're not answering the questions.
No,
I understand.
You have 24 hours a day of anti-Trump material. You're not going to give 3 minutes for the American people to hear the real experience of Donald Trump.
There's one viewer that you care about right now, and you're being obsequious. Please him, okay?
No.
And I think I've wasted enough of my viewers' time.
CNN's Jake Tapper there shutting down that interview with Stephen Miller, President Trump's top advisor. And McKay Coppins is my guest writer, staff writer for The Atlantic. You can link to his piece, headline Trump's Right-Hand Troll, at our website, onpointradio.org. McKay Coppins, that exchange, of course, went viral. I'd love to ask you, though, sort of going back to the beginning of this relationship, Stephen Miller and Trump, what did they see in each other? In other words, what did Trump see in Miller? What did Miller see in Trump when Donald Trump announced his run for the presidency?
Yeah, so when Trump announced his candidacy in 2015, most of Washington kind of scoffed at the idea of a Trump presidential bid. Certainly most in the media, including myself, frankly, but also, most Republicans on Capitol Hill saw it as basically a joke or a publicity stunt. Stephen Miller was not that way. He immediately saw the appeal of a Trump presidency. To him, Trump kind of manifested or embodied everything that Miller cared about. He, you know, the things that Trump talked about, political correctness, immigration, the need to take apart the political establishment, all of these things appealed to Miller. But the thing that struck me when I was talking to Stephen Miller is that what got him most riled up, kind of most excited about Trump, even in our conversation, was his ability to kind of perform and provoke his opponents. That it's clear that they both share this instinct for agitation or provocation, and the kind of thrill that they both feel when they say something that will offend or outrage large numbers of people. That's an instinct that they share, and it kind of explains, frankly, a lot of the conservative movement in the Trump era. So much of our political culture now is dominated by this kind of trolling on the right, where they're not trying to persuade the other side. They're not trying to advance their ideas, or not only. They're trying to, make their points in the most offensive or outrageous way possible to elicit kind of an angry reaction from the other side.
Okay, Coppins, let's take a couple more calls. Nick is calling from Brookline, Mass. Nick, you're on the air. It's good to have you. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Hi, Anthony. I really appreciate this great conversation. I was just going to say, I think that something that might be missing, I remember Steve Miller basically claiming that the president will not be disagreed with or something like that in a conference that existed. So, and I'm also looking at his immigration policy outside the context of what just happened, which goes after legal immigrants, like the lottery system or families being reunited. And I just see this as a movement towards an attempt for white nationalist autocratic rule by people that are hungering for it by creating sort of like, and that's the only way you can lock up kids. If you look at is looking as less than human. That's why all these people that were Jewish were coming out of the woodwork and saying this is what happened in the ghettos under Nazism. So I just see it as a part of a bigger picture. And I know I might sound alarmist or, but I just don't see how you'd look at it any differently.
Nick, we got it. Let me put that to McKay Coppins. And let me, McKay, I just want to read a headline that just moved on the Associated Press on the AP. Immigrant children as young as 14 housed at a juvenile detention center in Virginia say they were beaten while handcuffed and locked up for long periods in solitary confinement, left nude and shivering in concrete cells. That, according to the AP, the abuse claims against the Shenandoah Valley Juvenile Center near Staunton, Virginia, are detailed in federal court filings that include a half dozen sworn statements from Latino teens jailed there for months or even years. But disturbing news there, McKay. But respond to our caller. I mean, a movement of a white nationalist autocratic rule. I mean, that's strong stuff. But respond to that.
So I'll tell you first what Miller says, because I did put this question to him. Of course, a lot of people believe that he is motivated primarily by racism or xenophobia or a white nationalist ideology. Miller fully owns the term nationalist. He considers himself an American nationalist, but he rejects white nationalism. He says that he is not racist. He is not a white supremacist. He wants to help all Americans. But of course, there are those who observe from the outside, and even those who have known him personally over the course of his life, who say that there have been signs of a kind of deep-seated racism. One person I talked to is named Jason Eastless, who grew up with Stephen Miller, was actually friends with him when they were kids, and he's now a progressive activist. But what Jason Eastless told me is that shortly before, they were friends through middle school, and the summer before they entered high school, Miller called him and told him that they couldn't be friends anymore. And one of the reasons that Miller gave him, according to Jason Eastless, was his Latino heritage. That was one reason they couldn't be friends anymore. Hmm. Now, the White House has, of course, disputed that and said that wasn't true. But this gets at it gets at this idea that there might be something deeper than just, hard right immigration policy convictions motivating him.
Indeed. And McKay, in your profile of Stephen Miller in the Atlantic, I'm looking at this page right now at Duke University. Through an event called the Great Immigration Debate, Stephen Miller got to know a graduate student named Richard Spencer, who, of course, would go on to become one of America's leading white supremacists. But you also make the case that when you put that to Miller, he said that he condemns Richard Spencer's views, right?
Well, he actually did this to the Washington Post. He said, "I condemn his views. I have no relationship with him. He was not my friend." Now, again, with all these things, it's hard to parse, you know, how much politics is at play and how much, you know, the truth is there. But it is true that they crossed paths when they were at Duke.
My guest, McKay Coppin, staff writer at The Atlantic magazine. We're talking about the news this week on the border, the president's executive order signed yesterday ending family separation, his family separation policy. We're also talking about Stephen Miller, the top Trump aide, who's really got a lot to say about the president's immigration policy. Let's go to Melanie, who's calling from Marblehead, Mass. Melanie, you're on the air. Go ahead. I'm glad you called.
Thanks very much, Anthony. Yeah, it kind of dovetails off of what Nick was saying, in that I believe it's actually very fear-provoking in general. It's a horrific situation, but where does it stop? They straight up said, a statement from the administration came out, that it was being used as a threat to dissuade people from illegal immigration. So where are those threats going to stop? I mean, these are bully tactics that are being implemented by President Trump and the administration, which he's used in the past, and he will continue to use. And when will it stop it with the citizens?
Melanie, we got it. Let me put the question to McKay Coppins. I mean, McKay, there's sort of two ways to look at this. I mean, one is through the prism of what you've been telling us about Stephen Miller and sort of the froth and controversy and chaos that has been created this week is exactly what people like Stephen Miller wants. I guess another way to look at it is the president had to back down this week and sign that executive order. I'm not sure where I stand on that, but that's sort of the question that I guess I'd put to that I think Melanie is raising, among other things.
Right. Well, this question of deterrence is important because, you know, President Trump is not the first president who's tried to deter waves of illegal immigration. President Obama, this is a problem that vexed the Obama administration, the Bush administration. Presidents are always trying to figure out how they can stop the flow of illegal immigration while maintaining basic levels of decency and humanity, right? The question, and it should be noted that President Obama received a lot of criticism from immigrant rights activists and advocates who said that even the Obama administration went too far in some of their policies. The Trump administration, especially with what they've been doing with family separation, has gone much, much further than any president before. So it is a good question. What are they going to do from here on out? It's true that they had to back down on this particular issue. Again, we don't know what that will actually mean and what it'll mean for the families that have already been separated. But is that only because in this particular instance it involved children and images and audio of sobbing children at the border, and that was just a bridge too far, that was the thing that they realized was going to be too problematic for them? Would that same level of backlash and public outcry take place if there was a different policy that didn't involve children? I don't know. But I can tell you that there are people in the White House who will continue to look for the toughest deterrence imaginable to keep future waves of illegal immigration.
But you raised such an interesting question, and it occurred to me a little while ago thinking about this conversation with you. You know, is this does this change the perception of the president now? In other words, he's crossed a lot of lines along the way, and every time people say, is this a new line? Is this right. Has he pushed it to a new level? But, you know, this debacle around family separation really seems to pose a new challenge. We're talking about kids, real kids. We saw them. As you said, we heard them cry. They were in cages. I mean, do you see this as a sort of new territory for this Trump White House?
I do, yes. I think that this episode can pretty, I mean, I don't even see this as a partisan issue or an ideological issue, although certainly it's been made into one. But this is something that I think that crosses a line that the Trump administration has not yet crossed before, and that no president before him has crossed. The question, though, is where do we go from here? And I don't know that, you know, I wish I could say they crossed the line, there was a big public backlash, they've retreated and they've learned their lesson. I frankly just don't know that that's the case.
I got it. So this is an election year. We're 5 months out from the midterm elections. How does Stephen Miller's brand of conservatism play out in the coming months? I mean, will Trump continue to embrace it? And if so, what kind of challenge or opportunity does this present to Republicans fighting to hold on to the House and Senate?
Well, it's a great question. You know, Politico actually just reported a couple days ago that Stephen Miller has been leading an effort within the administration, kind of quietly under the radar, to plan additional crackdowns on immigrants in the months leading up to the midterm elections. This, again, speaks to his view of the political landscape, where he believes that as long as Americans are fixated on this issue, it's a winning issue for Republicans and for Trump. I think we can expect to see more news coming out of the immigration front. I think we can see more crackdowns, maybe new policies that are implemented on the border and throughout the country in terms of deportations and vetting and things like that, that will probably create more controversy, and controversy that, at least in Stephen Miller's view, is constructive for him.
McKay, though, doesn't this create a huge challenge for some of these Republicans defending seats in sort of purple areas of the country? I mean, on the one hand, you know, they want to express to voters that they have little sympathy for undocumented immigrants breaking the law. On the other hand, lots of moderate voters are horrified by what they've seen this year. This seems to pose a huge and daunting political challenge for folks out there.
No question. Republicans who are trying to defend seats in anything but the reddest of red states or reddest of red districts are going to have a very difficult time navigating this issue, because on the one hand, they can't alienate their base of Republican voters. They're going to have to get those Trump voters out there. On the other hand, independent voters, moderate Republicans, certainly Democrats, are increasingly alienated by the Trump administration's immigration agenda. It's going to be partly up to Democrats here to effectively harness that outrage and turn it into, you know, grassroots energy that will help them win elections. But I don't see this as something that's going to help Republicans in swing districts or swing states.
Boy, what a week, what a story, and it's not over yet. McKay Coppin, staff writer for The Atlantic, it's always a great pleasure to have you. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Anthony.
And my thanks as well to Kristen Welker, who joined us at the beginning of this hour, NBC News White House correspondent. Listener, you can continue this conversation, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can also follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. On Point Radio is produced by Anna Bauman, Brian Hardinsky, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Allison Poli, Jeremy Rolosa, James Ross, Grace Tatter, Gretchen Voss, and Miriam Wasser. We had help from Caroline Anders. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.